You are listening to a sermon from MCA Church. To learn more about our community, head online to mcachurch.ca. Thanks.
When I imagine God scraping together the dirt of the earth, mixing it together, and then breathing into it, I can hear it. I can imagine the divine hands drawing his fingers through the dirt, getting it right underneath his fingernails. For some reason, I always imagined it to be red dirt. So I was amazed and delighted when I found out that the word Adam in the Hebrew means red. And it actually comes from the word Adama, which means the earth. I can hear the inhale and then the full deliberate exhale as something divine was imparted into the dirt. And I can hear the air lighting up with like a magical, mystical, miracle type electricity as the dirt began to form into something amazing, something human, the breath of God in the earth, man. So beautifully human, and there they stood with hopes and dreams and ambitions and fears and sorrows and the capacity to be loved and to love in return, the feeling, a need for belonging and something to be a part of. There they were, beautifully human. I can almost smell the garden scene when I read those first few chapters in the book of Genesis. The fruit blossoms on the trees coming out and becoming more potent in the evening time. Now, just a little bit of fan fiction here, but I always imagined that the reason why some trees and some bushes send out their fragrance and make it more potent just at dusk, it's because the earth remembers that it was in the evening when God walked in the garden. And it's like they're showing up their best for him because the earth remembers something humanity forgot. A time that was good. A time where heaven and earth were one. A time of the garden, of peace for the whole world. This is what we see, heaven and earth being one. It's a story told and retold countless times. It's the opening scene of the Bible and the closing scene of the Bible. But we're getting ahead of ourselves. Heaven and earth, one. But like how all stories worth reading go, this story took a turn. There was a separating that happened. Though separate seems too calm of a word, there was a ripping that happened. There was a tearing apart that happened, and it was violent in nature. Genesis 3 tells us about how one day Adam and Eve were walking in the garden. Now, they had instructions they could eat from every tree except this one. But in a scene that's been painted and written about and sculpted and performed and sung about countless times since, in an act of rebellion and disobedience, they reach up and they take the fruit anyways. Now, when I imagine it in my mind, her reaching out and plucking the fruit from the tree, I don't hear a plucking sound. What I hear is a ripping sound, a tearing sound that went out across the universe and was at such a decibel that it was incomprehensible to the human ear, but everyone could feel inside their gut. And humanity, from that moment of disloyalty on, were torn apart. Torn apart from the garden, torn away from heaven, torn apart from each other, and torn away from God, and the ripping was violent. A few chapters later, brother murders brother. Cain and Abel, and as Cain strikes Abel, and Abel falls to the ground with a scream, a knife ripping into his body, the tearing sound could be heard across the world. As humanity was ripped apart, and earth began to look a little bit less like heaven. A few chapters later, we have war, oppression, slavery, assault, and with each act, people scream in pain and humanity is taken apart. Freedoms are ripped apart by the invention of slavery. Society is ripped apart by greed and foolish kings. Families are ripped apart by jealousy. And every time they lied, every time they cheated, every time they stole from one another, every time they hurt each other, they became less human and more dirt creature. Until the people of the world were at such a brutal place of depravity that I can't even read the last few chapters of the book of Judges. I can't do it. It's too gruesome. And I can't even talk about it here because it is not appropriate for children, and I don't know who's watching. But humanity was literally ripped to pieces. And so it's here. In this dirty, repugnant, low place, humanity not acting good like God, the garden, such a faint memory, we don't even remember it anymore, but instead acting like dirt creatures, simply bent on our own survival. Peace isn't even a thought in our heads anymore, is in this place of humanity tearing each other apart, and the earth having no heaven left in it. It's here that we begin to hear another sound. It's a sound of hope. And it comes not from one voice, but from multiple voices, all in this one section of the book called the prophets. All these voices rise up together to sing. And as they sung, it was the heart of God that they sung of. It was the heartbeat of God. God's desire for the garden, God's desire for peace, God's desire for humanity. And this is what that heartbeat sounded like. Jeremiah, I will give them a heart to know me, that I am the Lord, and they will be my people, and I will be their God, and they will return to me with their hearts. Jeremiah 33, this is the covenant that I'll make with my people. Declares the Lord, I will put my law in their minds, and I'll write it on their hearts, and I will be their God, and they will be my people. Jeremiah 32, they will be my people, and I will be their God. Ezekiel 11, then they will follow my decrees and be careful to keep my laws, and they will be my people, and I will be their God. Ezekiel 14, then the people of Israel, they'll no longer stray from me, nor will they defile themselves anymore with their sins. No, they will be my people, and I will be their God, declares the sovereign Lord. Ezekiel 37, they'll no longer defile themselves with their idols and their vile images and with every one of their offenses, for I will save them. I'm going to save them from their sinful backsliding, and I will cleanse them, and they will be my people, and I will be their God. Zechariah 8, I will bring them back to live in Jerusalem, and they will be my people, and I will be faithful and righteous to them as their God. Ezekiel 37 gets decisive. My dwelling place will be with them, and I will be their God, and they will be my people. Thump. This is the heartbeat of God. It is the heartbeat of hope, of restoration, of bringing the world back to that place where heaven was on earth, back to that place of unity. Thump, thump, thump. And here's where the story gets really crazy, you guys. Because that heartbeat, that longing of hope, that longing to return to the garden, that heartbeat, heard only by the angels and by those lucky enough to hear the prophets speak, that heartbeat became human. It became an actual heartbeat inside the chest of a living baby born in a manger that we celebrate at Christmas time. That baby grew up to be a man, and with every beat of his man heart, he had hope. He had hope to bring heaven back to earth, and he was the hope of the world. John 1 says that he made his dwelling place among us, just like how Ezekiel said he would. He did what he said he would, And heaven began to return to earth, piece by piece. He touched the lepers and they were made well. He touched the dead and they rose again. He brought dignity to people who were societally rejected. He taught about a new kingdom, a kingdom of heaven. And he told them about this kingdom, that it was near, that it was at hand. He taught about peace, and he taught about forgiveness, and he taught about justice, but most of all, he taught about love. The most important of all these things, the whole law of the prophets can be summarized in this: love. And everywhere he went and everyone he touched experienced the kingdom of heaven on earth. Things that were torn apart began to come back together, and amending began. Restoration started. And it started in the hearts of anyone who would listen. And then Jesus brought Lazarus back from the dead. And that did it. His fame grew super quickly after that. People were talking about him nonstop. Was he the hope that they'd been waiting for? The one who would rescue them from the Romans? See, they didn't understand. They didn't understand the heartbeat. Jesus didn't come to save them from the Romans. They were under oppressive Roman rule at the time. He came instead to save them from themselves, to save them from something so much bigger, from the things that separated heaven and earth, from the things that violently were tearing them apart. Jesus came with a loftier goal in mind than people understood. They were hoping for rescue from the Romans. Jesus was hoping for heaven on earth. It was this hope of unity between God and man, the hope of the garden that beat in the heart of Jesus on that day, that we've come to call Palm Sunday. Palm Sunday, the beginning of Holy Week. That's what today is. And that's what we come today to celebrate. There's a church, some churches, mostly in homes all around the world today. People gather. Last year, you know, it was all about being in churches and waving palm branches. I don't know what that looks like for you today. But today is the day that we celebrate the emotional beginning of Holy Week. Jesus' entrance into the city. It was the beginning of the end, which was actually just another beginning. We see the scene laid out for us in Luke 19, the joyful, hope-filled celebration welcoming as Jesus rode a donkey towards the city. Luke 19, 36, as he rode along, the crowd spread out their garments on the road ahead of him. And when he reached the place where the road started down the Mount of Olives, all of his followers began to shout and sing as they walked along and praising God for all the wonderful miracles that they had seen. Blessings on the King who comes in the name of the Lord, peace in heaven and glory in the highest heaven. You can imagine the dust swirling in the air. You can hear the shouting and the singing. Last night, I heard some of that, and it reminded me of this scene. At 7 o'clock, people are going out onto their balconies and cheering for all the healthcare workers and frontline workers battling COVID right now. And imagine it somewhat like that, as Jesus is walking along and people coming out and just banging pots and pans and waving things and using whatever it is that they have at a time to just be caught up in the celebration. And it's emotional to be there and to hear it. Jesus was riding towards Jerusalem. It's a scene filled with emotion, delight, and a little bit of a tinge of rebellion. Now, the people made such a fuss and a noise celebrating the coming king that the religious leaders got angry, and they told Jesus to make them shut up. And Jesus, in his classic way, told them no. The scene is loud and joyous. Very different than the next time Jesus would be walking down the Mount of Olives. There would be shouting that time, a week from now, but no singing. Because the next time he would go down the Mount of Olives, he'd be guided not by a crowd of jubilant followers, but he'd be dragged by a crowd of thugs who were hired to arrest him. And maybe that's why Jesus spent Palm Sunday crying. See, everyone was shouting and celebrating and singing, but if you turn your eyes to Jesus, he was crying. Luke 19, 41 paints the picture. But as he came closer to Jerusalem and saw the city ahead, he began to weep. How I wish today that you of all people would understand the way to peace. How I wish today. There are so few times in the Bible where Jesus uses the word I want, or I wish, or I hope. This is deeply, deeply personal. How I wish today that you of all people would understand the way to peace. But now it is too late and peace is hidden from your eyes. Before long, your enemies will build ramparts against your walls and encircle you and close in on you from every side. They will crush you into the ground and your children with you. Your enemies will not leave a single stone in place because you did not recognize it when God came to you. And that broke his heart. He tried to warn them. He gets into the city. First thing he does, he goes into the temple and he sees it being misused. And it's this classic scene people like to talk about where Jesus flips tables and clears people out of there and says, this is supposed to be a house of prayer and you have made it into a den of robbers. And he kicks them out. He's like, you don't get it. You don't get what this is about. You don't get what this place is for. You just don't get it. He tried to warn them. He told them a parable, warning them again. He told them this story. A man planted a vineyard and leased it to tenant farmers and moved to another country to live for several years. At the time of the grape harvest, he sent one of his servants to collect his share of the crop. But the farmers attacked the servant, beat him up, and sent him back empty-handed. So the owner sent another servant, but they also insulted him, beat him up, and sent him away empty-handed. A third man was sent, and they wounded him and chased him away. What will I do? The owner asked himself. I know. I'll send my cherished son. Surely they'll respect him. But when the tenant farmers saw his son, they said to each other, here comes the heir to the estate. Let's kill him and get the estate for ourselves. So they dragged him out of the vineyard and murdered him. What do you suppose the owner of the vineyard will do to them? Jesus asked. They didn't recognize it when God visited them. Now, we can't be too hard on them. We can't be too hard on the religious leaders of their day, because how often is it that I don't recognize it when God comes to me? How often do I miss his subtle and sweet invitation to the kingdom? How often are my eyes closed and do I not recognize it when the kingdom is here and at hand? If Palm Sunday teaches us anything, it is that hope might look a lot different and much bigger than we expected it to. So this Palm Sunday, let us joyously welcome Jesus into our lives, into our hearts, and let us sing and shout and feel his heartbeat of hope for heaven on earth. And let our eyes be open to what heaven on earth might look like, because it's here. Everyone. The kingdom is at hand. The kingdom is near. It's all around us if our eyes are open to see it. God is mending. God is restoring. God is working. God is inviting us to open our eyes and our hearts to his ways, to his kingdom. God is creating justice around us. He is healing. Are your eyes open to recognize it? Right now, we've got lots of fear. We've got scared people hoarding. We've got selfish people not taking proper precautions to protect the vulnerable. We've got lots of anger. We have grief. But do you know what else I see? I see neighbors supporting each other in new and creative ways. I see families speaking to each other who haven't spoken to each other in a long time. I see the ozone repairing. I see dolphins returning to the canals in Venice. I see the sky clearing. I see the rat race priority in people's hearts slowing. I see generosity and kindness growing. I see the kingdom of God on earth expanding. And it's expanding slowly through the hearts of individual people. Do you see it? If you were to learn something from Palm Sunday, may it be a reminder to have your eyes open to see God's kingdom is near. And may you joyfully welcome it into yourself. Remember the heartbeat of God in these days. And may his heartbeat become your heartbeat. May his kingdom come. May his will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And may we have our eyes open to recognize it when it does. I'm going to end this by asking you, just leading you in a little prayer time of reflection. I say you take the next few minutes, just a minute of quiet. And I want you to just prayerfully reflect on the past 24 hours of your life. I want you to ask God to open up your eyes to the moments where the kingdom has been near. And then celebrate those moments. You might be surprised by what things or events come to mind. Allow God to speak to your heart and open your eyes and reveal the kingdom around you right now. Just take a moment of quiet to do that.